Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. My name is Jonathan, and welcome to the first episode of the FlexPipe Connection. In this episode, Julian and myself are going to be having a phone conversation with Leslie Pickering. Les is co-owner of QVive Consulting, based out of San Francisco, California, and specializes in working in the packaging and corrugated industry. During our conversation, we're going to talk about the major manufacturing wastes that Les encounters in his day-to-day, real situations, solutions that he proposes, benefits, and where they start with a consultancy. I hope you enjoy. So what we're going to be talking about is the major manufacturing wastes that you encounter in your day-to-day with Q5 in the corrugated industry.
The greatest amount of waste is material management, without doubt. So that's what you see on the production floor in front of you. And for the people, it's really motion. When we do observation circles and we're watching people, without doubt, when people are working in a poor environment, an industrial environment, generally motion and waiting for people and material management over production is what we see. Generally, transportation, no production on materials. I'll say that's the general observation when we go around.
Okay, so if we were to put that in layman's terms for people who aren't trained in lean like myself, how would you explain that?
Okay, great. So you'll see people leaving their machines quite a lot. What we call moving off station. And they're going to the office to check the paperwork. We see a lot of movement of people moving away from equipment and back to equipment and then walking around the equipment because things aren't presented to them in the most optimized manner. I would say that's what you would observe if you just went into any factory, see a lot of people moving around for not a good reason.
And Les, Julian speaking here. Myself, I don't know much about the industry, but I would think that the machine are just running by themselves. So what's the big problem of having the operator or someone like the supervisor leaving the machine?
Well, generally, okay, so depending on the level of competency of the equipment, many of them run on their own, and then when there's an issue, the machine stops automatically or you get an audible or a visual alert that pulls the people in. But generally, one of the main factors that the operator has to stay there is because they're responsible for quality. Still today, a lot of the equipment in the packaging industry, they'll have visual systems for checking high-speed defects, but a lot of the equipment still in the field don't have that. So they will make random and predetermined visual inspections against a sample that's been checked. So they're really pulled into the process quite a lot. And if they're off the machine, off station, they're not able to check that quality, unfortunately. So that's one of the reasons why they stay at the machine, check quality, and then also to check preparation of the next two or three orders so that they can ensure everything is ready.
When a customer calls you up and this is your first kind of contact with them, they're in a complete panic, they don't know where to start, how do you go about in where do you start, what's the first thing you look for?
Okay so generally we're called in two extremes. Number one, we're going to have to close the doors in 180 days. That's one extreme. The other extreme is generally the president or the manufacturing group and finance group have decided we're leaving a lot of money on the table and we want to get better, but our current processes won't get there. So they're making quite good margin, but they know they're leaving a lot of inefficiencies in the facility. So they're the two extremes we're normally called in for. Let's go down to the first one where the companies got lost. So companies, you know, all companies are different, but they're pulled in certain directions from the strengths of the people in the senior management group. So companies that are president is sales-led and he's got strong salespeople in there, So they'll be strong on sales processes, but the manufacturing processes aren't very well, and vice versa. If you've got a good manufacturing group, they know how to make it, but they don't really know how to sell it as well as they manufacture. So companies, you know, most of them grow organically, depending on the strengths and weaknesses of the senior management group over the prior years. And sometimes, unfortunately, companies sort of get lost. It wouldn't be a problem if the market was static, but the market moves on. So the big disruptor at the moment is Amazon, of course. Before Amazon, it was offshoring work to the Far East. So we just come back to Amazon. So Amazon's a big disruptor, so it's changing the market a lot, which is great for packaging because we're making more boxes than ever. So that's one possible, but of course everybody's under time constraints.
Okay.
Because, you know, when a person orders something, they decided to order it, they get a tracking number, and then the question is, where is my product? So companies get lost. So the market moves and they get lost, and then they don't know, okay, well, where do we start? So that's one extreme. Then I'll go to the other extreme, then I'll come back to how we do start. Then the other side is companies well-rounded. They're good at manufacturing, they're good at sales, but they realize that, okay, we're doing okay, we're making maybe 8.5 to 11% profit, but we think we're leaving 3 or 4% still on the table. So what they need is, what are the latest thoughts and processes to get us that extra 3 or 4%? So that's the extreme there. So you know, where do you start? Of course, well, you start by making a brief assessment of the facility in terms of where is the facility, which extremes are we working on, and you're looking for, generally people are focused on making the product and they're not focused on the process. Okay, so we call that an industrial environment. People are focused on making boxes, but they're not focused on the process of how to make a box, and that's the transition you go through. So we're looking for target areas where we're looking for at-risk safety behaviors. We're looking for what we call tribal knowledge. Let me just tell you a little about tribal knowledge. So every company is under threat about this. And senior management groups, this is one thing they should look at. So people are working in the company, and every company has these sort of A players, and they have a lot of knowledge inside their head.
Mm-hmm.
But these people are going to leave the company. So you have to plan for that. The gentleman's wife gets a new job and they have to move. There's a new child in the family, so somebody has to stay back. These type of things. And when those people leave the building, all that knowledge goes with them. So the senior management group, one of their big roles should be, where do we have a lot of tribal knowledge? How can we process that so that when that person leaves, we're not susceptible and vulnerable to that? So they're the things that we're looking for in the initial assignment when we go in.
Okay.
And then we make a presentation to the senior group. Hey, here's what we see. Here's where the issues and problems are. This is the solution, time frame, costs. And then it's just a basic decision for them is what's the ROI? And then off we go. It's really that simple. Now, that time frame of that, it can be 3 or 4 visits. It can be some time. You know, the sales cycle is a lot longer in some companies than others because they need a lot of data to make that decision.
Right.
Other companies, they need 3 or 4 decisions. Okay, this is what we're going to do. Off we go. I hope that helps.
And where this industry stands in terms of lean manufacturing, because we're doing a lot of business here with the automotive business Toyota being the daughter of TPS system and the lean manufacturing. Where this corrugated industry, you think, is compared to the other manufacturing industry in terms of lean?
It's a decade or a decade and a half behind.
Oh, really?
It has been historically a very slow moving industry. Because the equipment moves on a cadence pattern of every 4 years due to this big show in Germany called Drupa, where new equipment comes out every 4 years.
Okay.
So that sets the pace of change for the company. But another great disruptor is that digital manufacturing has come in, and their cadence is every 18 months. So there's a big revolution going on in the business at the moment. So it will have to get faster very quick to take these new practices and principles. So you're going to see a large intake of better processes and lean manufacturing principles in the packaging industry, and it's wide open for them. It really is wide open.
Do you feel there's more bigger companies than smaller that are getting into it, a little bit like the automotive did, where the first big assemblers starting using and putting in place lean programs, and then tier one, tier two started to follow the same path? You see that as
yes.
Well? Yeah.
Okay. So what's going to happen really is that another large disruptor from Europe, a company called DS Smith, are coming to the United States, and they only bring best practices. So the industry really is sort of not known much at the moment, but DS Smith is going to be the Amazon of the US market. It's going to be a big catalyst, and that's going to have to. People are going to have to get better very, very quickly if David S. Smith comes into their market.
Right.
So this is another disruptor that you can't control. You just need to acknowledge it, that these are the things that are changing the market that you don't have any effect on, and you've just got to compete or go home, really.
more competition, right?
Yes. Yeah. More competition, and they're very good at what they do. They know they're good at what they do. They buy paper well. They manufacture very, very well. They're very effective. And they've got 30 or 40 working models all over Europe. You know, they implement plants on a different level. I wouldn't say as high as Tesla, but it's that leap, a massive leap forward. And older plants, you know, even with new equipment, you can't compete, because they're buying the new equipment. They've got new layouts, low manning, lots of automation. You know, they're very good.
That's crazy. When you say that these people at BS Smith are as sophisticated as Tesla, that's just simply because they're investing into the technology and making those moves.
Well, they buy the right equipment. They're very good at that. That's number one. Number two, how they set up their manufacturing facilities is quite a lot different. They learnt a lot in 96 when a new facility went into Lincolnshire, and they're still using that model. It was such ahead of everybody else. They're very open to close collaboration of the vendors. To give them market advantage. They're very good at what they do, and you know they are like the Tesla were. Like I said, they're not as radically different as that, as an internal combustion engine to an electric, but it's that type of leap forward that DS Smith will bring to the market, and it's going to be that's another big disruptor. Amazon, DS Smith. They're amazing what's coming down the pike, and companies will have to quickly change. Now, one of the things that will help companies is that if they've already had equipment in for several years, it'll be paid for and it won't be costing anything but maintenance. And the DS Smiths and others, when they come in with new equipment, of course, there's lots of depreciation costs. But they're here for the long haul, and they know that's just part of the game. So the existing companies, they'll stay for a while, but then they'll have to reinvest, and that will put up the cost base, and they won't be able to compete then. So I'm expecting lots of consolidation in the next 5 years. It's been happening for the last 2 or 3 years, and more consolidation in the North American market.
Okay.
Wow. So, okay. So if we get back to your day-to-day, when you get to a customer's a customer's location, and he's already explained what he's looking for. What does the situation typically look like when you get there? What jumps to your eyes?
Well, of course, where do we start? So that's always an issue. And we generally, what we say there is, the first process, we construct what we call an island of excellence so people can see it. They don't really believe it till they can see it.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, well, where do we start? Well, generally, it's either a very visual process in the facility that everybody has to go by. Doesn't have to be a new one. I mean, that takes a lot of problems away. If you do a new process, people say, oh, well, the machine's new, what do you expect? But you know, there's a lot of cynicism, and it's understandable. You know, lots of programs have come into the company. Not many have taken root. So here's another thought of the day type of thing. Or the machine with the most money going through it. So if you make improvements onto that, more money goes to the bottom line. So that's just a general discussion with the senior management group, the pluses and negatives of, okay, this process might have more money going through it, but it's at the back of the factory, or this one's right at the front, but it's got some issues with ABC. That's just a general, you can start either of those two extremes, or something in the middle where, okay, we're going to start here and we're going to continue right down the facility. That's just a general discussion, really. And there isn't a hard rule about that. Just because of the layouts of the facilities, most have been grown organically. They haven't been sort of thought out as a big grand plan.
Mm-hmm.
So really, then you just have to have a discussion about the pluses and minuses of this process. Usually, we take three in the area, and we'll have the discussion. And then, okay, this is where we're going to start. So let's say process A, we want to change this environment from the current environment, what we call the industrial environment, people focused on making boxes, and we want to change it to a visual workplace where people are focused on the process of making boxes. If you have the right processes and people undertake the processes, a quality box is an automatic. So you're much less dependent on the skill of the people, because you've got processes in place that when a person comes to the area, this is what you need to do to get a perfect box off. You know, we're making boxes today at 24,000 an hour. So small changes, you know, you can make 300 boxes really quickly, waste, and it's very, very fast processes. So
okay.
It's amazing, but nobody really knows about it in the supermarkets. Making boxes is... it's super interesting, and there's lots of technology in there. So we go to the machine and we give some training. We have to set then training times for the operators, and okay, here's what's going to happen. And when we say operators, these are everybody that feeds the machine. It can be the fork truck drivers, can be people that work with automation on the automatic lines, supervisors of the area, and you've got to do everybody on the machine. So that everybody knows, here's what we're trying to do. Generally, the project is kicked off by the president of the company, why he's chosen Q5, and this is what we're going to do, and why we have to do that. Please give it your very best efforts. You know, we're investing a lot of money, we're investing a lot of time. This is, we've got to get the first one in so we can move the company forward. So that's a very important kickoff from the president of the company. And it's a lot of sincerity, and he means it. He's investing a lot, and it's important for them that the project, the first project, gets kicked off correctly.
I remember the first few plants I visited in the industry, I remember what really impressed me. It was the number of raw material on site. But I guess you know nothing about this industry. Is this something normal? Is it something eventually you would look at? Or
one of the hardest things for them is to, you know, ideally you want to have only the right things that the people need in the right number and in the right place. And in packaging, they have an abundance of material because most orders are plus 10%. That's been an industry standard. But that really is a terrible thing because it's really it holds everybody back.
What do you mean, all orders? When you're saying 10%, what do you mean exactly?
So let's say an order is for 6,000.
Yeah.
And on the invoice, we're able to deliver plus or minus 10% on that number.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And that's been an industry standard probably since the 50s. Now,
wow.
Customers,
okay.
Yeah, so customers, they can say, no, I want 0 plus 7%, 0 plus 5, or 0, 0. But they pay more for that, which is immoral, really. You know, we often have the conversation. So let me just understand, it's going to cost me more to get what I want. And say, yeah, that's why. So why? Because making 0, 0 orders is difficult. But really, the customer, it shouldn't really matter. But that's just an industry standard. So customers are charged more, an upcharge, for them to get what they want. Yeah.
Okay.
So because it's plus or minus,
they just rebill it.
Yeah. Now, of course, in every factory, it's not a principle we agree with.
Yeah.
Every factory tries to make and bill as much as possible. So let's say this customer were was 0 plus 5%.
Okay.
So then they are trying to make what they think is the factory thinks, yeah, but we're selling more boxes. But really, what they should do is make 0, 0, get the order off and get the next order on. So you have 480 minutes mm-hmm. in a shift. So 48 minutes is making overs. So sometimes those customers, they're low margin work. You need to get that off the machine and get higher margin work on, but they don't think like that. That's part of our job to challenge the paradigms they have. And okay, now let's think about it. Why are we doing low margin work? Why don't we come off that job and make high margin work? So that takes you down another field. That's another series of issues and problems, but that's part of our job. Challenge the status quo. These are your mm-hmm. paradigms.
Mm-hmm.
And then how to sell that in the market. So that's some of the things we do.
All right. So earlier you were talking about how presidency in the company is going to approach you because obviously the operators aren't the ones that are making decisions and coming into contact with you and asking for your services. So when you talk about the operators, what's the most common source of resistance that you get from them?
From the operators?
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one we always get is, oh yeah, we've done these projects before.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just hunker down. It just run right over us. Well, after about 2 years in the project, then they start realizing, oh, it's not going away. This I said, no, it isn't going away. We told you that right from the start. Yeah. So that was in a lot of industries, right? So I understand that because the senior management group, they try to launch projects and incentives and ideas before, and many of the time, you know, they've not been launched appropriately or correctly, and they don't really get roots, and there's no really plan of implementation, a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cynicism is right out the gate. That's the first one we feel. And then of course the next thing is, what's in it for them? That's the other important thing that most people forget. So we just had an incident this week. You know, new production supervisor comes in, hey, I need you to fill all these in for me so I can do this, and then doesn't address how it's going to help the people. So the important part is, listen, if we were able to do this, you're not going to work harder, you're going to work less, and you're going to make the same or more boxes, and it's going to be easier for you. Well, why is that? Then we explain that to them. And then the third thing is, and then the important thing is, certainly this time of year when we've got lots of vacations and people are coming off one machine onto another, for many, many times, this third person coming onto the machine, I think it's so difficult to sort of understand where things are on the equipment because things aren't standardized. The third person really can't help you. So really, the main operator, operator one, he's doing more work, really. So we explained to them, look, if we have some standardization, the third person can help you very quickly, get you up to speed. So that's how we, that's our approach. It's very people-centric, very focused on the people.
Yeah.
This is how it's going to help you. And then, of course, lastly, if we don't do that, we're going to lose our jobs and our company. So, you know, while we have a chance now and we've got, we're making margin,
mm-hmm.
let's invest a little. Remember, we're trying to teach people not just about how making boxes. You can make anything under this principle. It's just a widget, but we're just in a lot of manufacturing for packaging. But really, once you know how to manufacture, if Amazon wanted, I want printed inside and outside, you can make those boxes. It's exactly the same principle once you've learned how to manufacture. And we're trying to make people, trying to encourage people, think about how you make boxes, not just making boxes, how you make boxes. Why are you taking those steps? Why are you doing that? How can this be presented to you? It's all part of that ergonomics. So they're the type of dialogue we have with the operators to get them on board.
And I would add, because I've seen you work before, the fact that you put your hands to work, you're really doing your own obey a room, you're assembling racks, you're doing those little cards yourself. I think that helps to convince the operators that you're really into it. You really want to help them, right? You're not just there in some office room and doing some spaghetti diagram.
That's a good point. You know, a lot of groups like ours, you know, they'll do boardrooms very well, and they're great. They make great PowerPoint presentations.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we make great presentations, but we're on the floor sharing the knowledge with the people, and that's what people like about us. That's our massive advantage in the market. We can show you how to do it. We can do it, and we can show you how to do it, and we can explain to you why it's got to be done this way. So I think that's one of our great strengths when presidents are looking for the right vehicle for the company. So the president, they're talking to similar people in the presidential groups, and they're looking for the right vehicle for the people. And that's what the president does. He's looking for the right vehicle. So they might call four groups in like us, and then we make our presentations. Here's our approach. This is how we do it. And generally, there aren't many groups like ours. We're very hands-on, sharing the knowledge with the people. That's the key, really, because you want to transfer the knowledge. And then the people take that to the next machine and the next machine. And then we've done our job then. We've got them on the right road. We've given them the latest ideas and solutions. And then we're on to the next customer.
Okay. So speaking of solutions, for people who are just tuning in, FlexPipe actually manufactures a tube and joint system, which is modular. They build pretty much any sort of solution that would be required for the processes. So in from your experience, what kind of solutions do you normally suggest? Are you in the modular at all? Are you in something else?
Well, so in the packaging industry, you know, people have used traditionally either wood structures or they've used welded structures. And I perfectly understand why they do that. The big difference for us is we come with this modular approach. Well, why is that? I mean, we don't normally see that in industry, so exactly. Mm-hmm. So here's the story we always tell them. So Uline, of course, is a very successful company, and we generally never buy anything from Uline unless it's something like a trash can or something like this. And why do we not buy anything from Uline or similar competitors? For two reasons. Number one, there's no competitive advantage. That means your competition can buy it. That's number one. Number two, it's never ideally sized for the job, so you have to conform to it instead of the structure conforming to you and the work. Yeah. So they're the two big reasons why we don't do that. So that's another massive advantage in the market for us in terms of, okay, we're going to build you a solution, either using parts from the OEM. Sometimes we integrate modular systems onto an OEM structure. We do that for a Swiss company. Or we say, no, that's completely insufficient, or there's nothing supplied by the OEM, and we build that solution for the people. So you just have to go into the factories and never underestimate the ingenuity of the operator. They've built a solution, but it's out of pieces that they found in the factory, little bits of metal, some wood, okay, this plastic sheet. Okay, great. So there's a need. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to show you how to build a solution. So that's why, there's some of the reasons why we build modular solutions. We've been using modular solutions now for over 10 years. Our first customer that we built that was in 2003, I believe, in okay. Illinois. And that's when we built our first tubular structures. We sort of fell into that. And we've been using, you guys could tell us how long we've been using exclusive Flexpipe. But we've probably built more structures with Flexpipe than the other modular solution provider during time. And
you guys built, what solution do you guys build to name that?
You
have a lot of cars, like the job
transportation
cars.
Wagons. Yeah, so transportation wagons for the new digital world. So one of the problems in digital world is transportation and materials. So we build an exclusive transportation system for them. And here's the big advantages of that. Number one, fantastic wheels and casters, making it easy for the people. Number two, the right brakes are on the casters. Three, the structures are lightweight but strong.
Mm-hmm.
And number four, the greatest thing is you can stack the structures. So that means is you can have a wagon. You can build 10 wagons on the footprint of one. Traditionally, when you build wood structures or steel structures that won't nest or stack, now you have, at the end of the day, you might have 40 square meters, 40 square meters by 10, all with wagons in at the end of the day. It takes up a lot of floor space. And so cleaning is difficult. So our systems are built specifically to stack. So that's what we do in digital structures. So we build the whole environment around digital, and then you go to analog. And we build everything on an analog machine, operating station, trash solutions, what we call one cart, one job, or flow racks for the tooling. So depending on the order length of the job, we usually use two solutions, a flow rack, so we can present the materials to the operator, or we use what we call a one cart, one job, where everything for that job is on that cart. And we've been making one cart, one job for 20 years. We introduce that to the industry, and it's still a revolution for most facilities.
What's the main advantage of this cart versus what people are using as a standard?
Okay, the main thing, great question. The main thing is there, from 10 meters away, I cannot see if everything is there for the job. So what that means is, when the machine stops an order and he goes to the next job, if something is missing, then yes, that has to be found during the machine setup, which extends the machine setup. When I build the right type of wagon, one cart, one job, so I can easily see if all the components are on there, then the operator can see during, as the machine is making production, hey, we have a problem over there. There's no ink available for that job. It's either, mm-hmm. either we don't need ink. So it allows the people to ask the right questions at the right time when the machine's making production, instead of when the machine stopped. So this is why these one cart, one jobs are really important. And then secondly, if the schedule changes, let's say we always have three orders ready at the machine. Let's say order two has to move up to order one. All you have to do is move the wagon. Without that type of visual indicator, he has to go to the schedule, has to go to a computer, has to print out the schedule again, has to be... So lots of obsolescence. And as things are moving faster and faster, we really don't need a schedule at the machine. We just present the jobs in the right order. And that tells the operators which is the next order to run. So So that's why one cart will
reducing waiting and increasing hop time for the machine. That I guess the money is there, right? When the machine is running.
The machine is running for longer, and the setup times, the job changeover times are shorter.
Okay.
So that's what pays for that. You're able to get more orders on the machine because you're transferring stop time to run time. So that's why the machine makes more money.
Okay. And now, I think you also, sorry, go ahead, Wes.
Well, an important thing is, one of the things we do is I want to know the cost of the machine per minute. Now, why is that important? If I can show easily statistics, the machine is now making so much per day compared to how it was before, that's how we make the justification, the ROI, and the operators, this is how you're doing a much better job.
Mm-hmm.
The machine is now earning X instead of what it used to earn. So it's a very easy metric, cost per minute. Sorry, Julian, you was going to say?
No, that's a good point. Keep talking about KPI and showing what are exactly the benefits for the entire team. But I see you're redesigning most of the time a lot of the station, the operator stations.
Mm-hmm.
What are the benefits? Why do you suggest doing that?
Why redesign so often?
Okay.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't. It's nothing related to the machines or just the KPI you just talked about. So.
Okay, that's a very good question. You know, why are we focused in on that? Well, first of all, the ergonomics of the person is very important. Fatigue for the operator, that's very important, especially in climates such as today. We have a lot of heat at the moment in North America this time of year. That's number one. Number two, things change sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So new safety books come out, or, hey, listen, there's a new procedure on this. Okay, so now we have to redesign. Maybe I need a new folder that's coming from HR. Okay, so we're going to make a small modification. But you can do that with modular systems. So it's adaptable and changeable for today and the future. When you build it out of wood or steel, you can't do that. So then the booklet just gets put on top. Next thing is, I can't find the booklet. Where's the booklet? I don't know. See, they haven't thought through that. Hey, when I implement something into the production area, okay, well, where's it going to go? How are we going to manage that? So these modular systems enables us to make several changes as things change, which is important. Things change. And these systems allow us to make quick, rapid changes at relatively low cost, where other structures, wood or prefabricated steel, does not. So if the competition make a steel structure, great. For today, it works. But in 2 years' time or 6 months' time and thing changes, it's so hard to make a change to that, it doesn't get changed. Modular systems, I can make those changes in 30 minutes to an hour and a half, and I'm back to standard again. That's why the modular system works better than anything else yet. Changing systems that you've got no control over them. Human resources, they come with new mandates for ergonomics. Okay, I need to do this, this, and this. Easy. And if I have to build a new structure to serve those changes, I can take the old one out, strip it, and reuse it. So it's cost effective. You can't do that with the other structures. It won't strip down. It's just scrapped. So that's why we use modular system.
You say you're going to modify the structures. Are you actually putting your work gloves on and going on the floor and modifying the structures yourself? Or is there operators that designate or that have been designated by the company you're trying to help out to assemble?
Okay, so there's a range of solutions there. Generally, depending on the mechanical aptitude, most operators can do that because you just need a saw and an Allen key in the right fittings. So it's relatively easy. Or we have designated people, what we call CI, continuous improvement. That those people can be assigned to the changes with the operator. So it's important to involve the operator.
Right.
Because we might see a certain way it should be done, but you're always trying to get the operator's involvement. Hey, have we thought about this idea? Hey, I saw that on the other machine. Can we have that? Yeah, of course you can. So you want to solicit good ideas from the people. Now, not all ideas are great, but you can help the operator understand what, you know, we've tried, that's a great idea, but we've tried that and we know it doesn't work. Let me show you over here what's working better. So our CI people, we teach the CI people how to approach that problem. So we've got to have operator involvement, and either CI do it or we can do it. Generally, if we're in the field right there and then, we'll make the changes with the operator.
Okay. And looking at your pictures on LinkedIn, because I see you're posting pictures, I see you doing a lot of 5S stuff, shadow board. What are the benefits of doing that?
Okay, so...
For this industry, because...
Yeah, okay. So this industry has historically put important tools in toolboxes, either plastic toolboxes in the office or metal toolboxes, or the OEM, the original equipment supplier, they have supplied toolboxes so it stays with the machine. The problem is with toolboxes, when something's missing, you don't know it's missing until you need it. So we present all the tools in a particular manner. One, we can see when something's missing. Two, we know the operator has all the tools. And three, again, because the operator has all the right things, job changeovers are considerably faster. So that's why we do that in the office and in the production area.
Okay.
So when you say that you see that something's missing, I guess that you're very strong with visual indicators, color coding.
Okay, so that's another good question. So, you know, lots of people have tried different methods to do shadows, etc. And we see lots of trials in factories. But, you know, many times there's a pegboard with an outline around the tool. That just doesn't work.
Oh, no?
Hello?
Yeah, I was going to say, why that?
Okay, it's not strong enough. You need three things for the shadow tool structure to work well. Number one, you need a contrast shadow behind the tool. Number two, you need color. Number three, you need a label. It won't work without all of those three elements. Very important. Two of them, it won't work. You need all three to sustain that tool board. That's really important.
Okay.
So you've got to have the right solutions, durable, that work, and that are sustainable.
Okay.
And
do you have...
Label, color, and shadow.
Okay. So for your shadows, do you have a fetish color that you go towards? And do you particularly like the apple green, or is that the customer's choice? Or
I think it's the blue, from what I've seen.
Well, yeah, blue is the international standard for information.
Oh, yeah?
Lots of kiosk, information kiosks, they tend to use blue. But sometimes the company already has a protocol in place, and we just fall in with that. If it's established, if it isn't, we'll just incorporate blue as this is the new standard. Now, some factories, you know, they have a different color shadow for every machine. Well, that's okay, but you can't get every, you know, after 12 colors, it's hard to get that. So we use one standard shadow color, and then we add a small color to the tool to make sure the tool is assigned to that area. So that's how we do that. Go on.
Did you see a link between having those shadow boards and the hub time machine, like reducing the die changing, or the, I don't know how you call that,
tool change. So tool change. You know, a lot of the many operators, they don't have what they need, or they could have two ratchets instead of one ratchet, but they've only got one ratchet. because we're not thinking speed, right? It's like a NASCAR, you know, and I've just got one air gun and I could use two air guns. It's the same thing. So they just don't have the right things a lot of the time. Or one shift has all the tools and they're all locked away because the other shift have lost them or another machine has took them. But that's why you've got to have everything out, and every morning when they come in, they make a visual check. Oh yeah, we have all the tools. Okay, we're okay to go. If something's missing, in the first 5 minutes, you alert the supervisor. You have a quick look and you alert the supervisor. Hey, I have a main piece of the tools missing. Then the supervisor has to try and find that.
Okay. Awesome.
I'd like you to talk about the I call that moonshine shop. I forgot the name you're using when you're putting this little area where change will happen and you'll really. How do you call that again?
So you call it the moonshine shop. Is that our CI workshop?
Yeah, your CI workshop. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we have built. We've only built 2 CI workshops in the world. We've only built 5 Obeya rooms. So the new ones that you're seeing in Canada at the moment, the CI workshop is number 2 in the world.
Okay.
And the Obeya room in packaging, and the Obeya room is only the number 5th in the world.
So what's happening in this CI workshop? What's the purpose of
it? We say this is where the magic happens, but really this is where the ideas from the operators are turned into solutions for the production floor in a structured method. So an operator will come along with an idea. He's made a little sketch for us. Then one of our CI teams will be assigned that. They'll go to the operator to talk and understand, okay, what are your problems? What do you think your solutions are? Let me understand. Then he makes a sketch, and then he converses with the operator. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? What tools do you use? How high do you think it needs to be? Okay, all right. So then we understand what the operator needs, and then we construct the solutions for them. And before it's all finished, then we bring the operator back and, okay, this is what we understand the issues and problems are. These are the solutions we have. Is there anything else you can think of now you've got it there? Is it the right length? Is it the right height? Usually, you know, we're pretty close because we know a lot what the operator needs now. Sometimes the operator comes. Last week, we saw this new moving shelf they designed with roller bearings. Oh, beautiful. And we would never come up with that, but we see all these great ideas. So the CI workshop, remember, our idea is problems in the morning, solutions in the afternoon, rapid solutions implemented in the production environment to help the people make boxes faster, better and cheaper. Now,
the CI workshop really empower the labor, empower the operators to create their ideas, basically.
Yes, quickly, because historically, historically, if there's a maintenance shop, the operator will make a sketch. Okay, 2 weeks later, it comes out of maintenance, slightly not the right length. You know, it's very difficult to make changes. You know, the operator, he can't see everything the first time round. So when we bring the basic structure over, then we have another conversation with him. So it's a method of how we do that. But our idea is to, operators have got great ideas.
Yeah.
They're on the front lines making the boxes every day. We've got to get those ideas out to them and create fantastic solutions to help them do their job quicker, better, faster than the competition. That's what that CI workshop enables them to do in a cost-effective manner.
Okay, very cool. So Les, thank you so much for joining us today on this call and talking to us about about what's going on in the corrugated industry and the packaging industry. For people who are curious, where can they find you?
We still have an existing website called quadrant5c.com. We're revamping the whole website. That will be up in about 6 weeks.
Okay.
People will be able to buy some of our products right then and there. So there's a link to your company. There's a link to some other companies that we're strategically aligned with that we also help them. So you can find us there at www.quadrant5c.com. We'd love to hear from anybody. Just drop us a line. And we love talking to people who are thinking about these ideas. We've got 42,000 photographs.
Wow.
So we have a large library of good and great and not so good. So we can help them if people want ideas of what to do, you know, go in the right direction. Love to hear from them.
Awesome. And I guess we can find you on LinkedIn as well at Leslie Pickering.
Yeah, and we'll be posting more things there. We're 3 posts ready for next week.
Wow, okay, being proactive too. Awesome, I love it. All right, Les, well, you have yourself a great day, and we'll talk to you soon, bud.
Thanks very much. Bon weekend, everybody.
Bye.
Ciao.
Ciao.